first of all, I just want to say I'm feeling very overwhelmed this morning. And not overwhelmed by the nervousness of being here, but overwhelmed by the Holy Spirit. I just feel this is all a gift. It's an incredible gift. And Simar last week, I think, in his opening comments, mentioned how overwhelmed and moved he was to be here. And I'm feeling that as well. So it's a great, great gift to be here. And I first of all, I want to thank the committee here for inviting me. This is a very, very special gift to put this all in focus for me right now at this point. And I'm just speaking for myself. Arlene's going to speak in a minute. To bring this all into focus, this relationship of inter-spiritual dimensions of our lives. And in its all in its complexities. Of course, we know what's happening in our world today. We're all familiar with that. This is a pivotal, pivotal issue for us today. It's a pivotal, pivotal issue. And I'm honored and I'm humbled to be able to speak to this today. And I hope I can do so worthily. I did invite Iman Yama. I consider him a friend, even a close friend and a brother. I called him and I asked him if he would consider coming and being here today, and he said he would, but unfortunately had to be in Los Angeles. But he even said, I would probably change my plans to come here. I said, no, don't change your plans. It's not that important. I just hope that this will be a statement between us, but much beyond that, of interreligious dialogue, and that we are taking a proactive stance, especially here in our own community, of what we see can be negative effects in other places in our world. So I see this as a very, very pivotal and important moment for us. Judith, I want to thank you for your kind introduction. That was too kind. Thank you. Any reference to Father Virgil humbles me totally. Thank you and for all your thoughts on that. Arlene?
So I want to echo Father Larry's gratitude. I am really grateful to be here. And shall I tell them how I got here? Well, or shall we save it?
Why don't we save that for a minute?
Okay. So you heard a lot about my background. I will just say that one of the things I did while I was in New York City was work at Covenant House. So many of you may know Covenant House. Father Bruce Ritter, also a Franciscan, started it to work with street kids. I work with the kids of the street. I train volunteers to work with the street kids. For almost 6 years, went to the White House because of that work, and was a speaker for the agency. And so although I am not Catholic, I have hung out with Franciscans for a really long time. So I feel really blessed, and certainly Francis and that way of being in the oneness and being in one's heart and being with all creation resonates deeply with me as well. I got called to move to Santa Barbara, sort of like if you've seen the movie Field of Dreams, it made no sense. My life was working perfectly fine in New York City, and I was crossing with some friends, and I just kind of got this hit that I should move to California, which made no sense. And somebody said, oh, are you going to go to L.A.? And I went, no. It's supposed to be where the ocean and the mountains come together. And somebody said, well, that's Santa Barbara. And I said, well, I don't know. I've never been. That was in August. I came for a visit in September. I got ordained in my faith at the end of September. My mom passed before I got home. And I am convinced that she knew she was supposed to deliver me to be a minister and then she could leave. And I moved to Santa Barbara not knowing a soul, having a job, not having a place to live, but having the faith that I was being guided and it would all open up. And in fact, it has. So it's 22 years later and I am grateful to live in this community. And it didn't surprise me when I learned after I moved here that Santa Barbara was founded by Franciscans. It made perfect sense. So, thanks. That's about me.
If I could, I'd like to draw our attention first, since I'm representing the Christian standpoint, I would like to draw our attention to the scriptures and have this for my beginning inspiration. This is from the farewell discourse of Jesus. This is a prayer that Jesus prayed as he left his disciples. And this is one prayer that we know for certain that Jesus prayed this. It isn't exegesis, or it's this is what Jesus prayed, and this is his prayer for us. So, I pray not only for these, but also for those who through their word will believe in me. May they all be one, Father, as you are in me and I am in you. May they be one in us, so that the world may believe that you sent me. Okay. So, in our book, we're dealing with chapter 2 today, The Secret of the Ordinary, and I love that image that Samar used about Beg, the person that drew him into his conversion. And he uses the image of an apple, if you remember, and that's the symbol for the opening chapter. So I'd like to do a little exposition here. That is so good. This is a crisp, fresh apple that is so wonderful. And it has different layers, you know. The top tastes different than the bottom. The skin is different than the core. Beautiful, beautiful. That's the image that Bag used in the book, in the story. Now, what I'd like to do is, as I took a bite of that apple, you were not eating that apple and it was not in your hands. And yet, I dare to say, you and me were connected in the eating of that apple. You could taste and you could feel that apple. And we were one in the sharing of this apple. Okay. That's what I hope I can bring to you today, that sense of oneness. Okay. So I'd like to share with you a story. This happened about 2.5 weeks ago, and this is a true story. So I had to go up to Seattle, Washington for a funeral, for a family funeral. And I left Santa Barbara, and I was supposed to be just a routine little flight up there. And anyway, it was a horrific experience getting to Seattle and getting there on time. And I won't go into the details about that, nor will I say anything negative about United Airlines. But but anyway, on my return trip, I was flying from Seattle to Los Angeles, and then I was going on to Mexico to Guadalajara. So I got in the plane in Seattle, and I was sitting there in the plane, and it was a four-seater across, okay? And there were four seats and two on the other side of the aisle. And I was sitting there thinking all of these negative thoughts about United Airlines and being very angry and not wanting to talk to anyone or do anything. So I was sitting there, and as the people were coming in, and I took the window seat, and as the people were coming in, I was thinking, you know, I really want to be just alone by myself, and I don't want to talk to anyone. And so I said, I hope no one takes a seat next to me. And the people were coming down the aisle, and they said, the plane is full, so I knew someone was going to take my seat. So I was watching the people come in. I said, oh, please, not that person. not that person. And so finally, this young Asian woman came in, a young girl, very, very nice woman, looking woman, young girl. And I thought, okay, maybe she would be good, you know. Asian, you know, they're quiet, and she looks like a quiet person. So she sat down, and she sat down next to me. And her friend sat down on the other side of the aisle, on the other side of me. And lo and behold, who sits down on the next seat across is this Tibetan monk, who comes in, and he's sitting over there. So the four of us are sitting there. So I thought, okay, this looks like a good little group to be with. But I had no intentions of talking, okay? I wanted to be quiet. And so I'm sitting there. We took off, and she starts to take a little nap, this young girl next to me. And as she's taking a nap, she falls deep asleep, and her head rests on my shoulder. And I thought, oh, this is kind of tender. You know, it's kind of tender. This is really so gentle. So we're just sitting there, and she's got her head on my shoulder, and then she wakes up. And then the stewardess comes by to give us something to drink, and Then we enter into a little conversation. She says, you know, where are you from? And I said, I'm from, you know, Santa Barbara. And she said, well, I'm from Korea. And I'm just coming here to the United States. I'm going to be a foreign exchange student in Los Angeles. And I'm just getting off the international flight, and I'm coming to Los Angeles. And so I start asking about her and her name. And she says her name is Kim. Her last name is Kim. And so I know a number of Korean people. So I wanted to make her feel a little bit comfortable. And I know there's a strong Catholic influence in Korea. You know, the Korean church is very, Catholic church is very strong. So I said, are you Catholic? And she said, she kind of hesitated, like she didn't quite understand what I was talking about. And so I just said, well, to make her feel comfortable, I said, well, I'm a priest. I wanted to make her feel comfortable. And she said, oh, okay, I kind of, like I understand. Anyway, in the course of our conversation, all of a sudden she starts to open up to me. And she starts to talk to me about all these things. And she says, well, she says, yes, I'm a Catholic. My parents are Catholic. And we start into this real dialogue. And I look over at her friend and this Tibetan monk that's sitting over there next to her friend. And I'm just in my regular clothes. And we're carrying on this big conversation. And I'm almost thinking, he's looking over at us and saying, what are you talking to that young girl about? Like, are you trying to pick her up or something like that? And so I became very, very conscious. But then in the course of our conversation, she says, I want to tell you my name. My name is Angela Kim. And I thought, oh, beautiful. Angela, that means an angel. And she said, yes, it means an angel. But she says, that's not my Korean name. And she wrote out her Korean name, and she said, in Korean it means, I am a blessing of Jesus. And I thought, this is so beautiful. This incredible, ordinary encounter now taking place on this plane. So we start talking a little bit more, and then she says, what about Los Angeles? Do you know Los Angeles? And I said, yes, I do. She said, what should I see or what should I not see in Los Angeles? And I said, she said, should I be careful of certain places? And I mentioned a couple places. I said, please be careful. Don't maybe go to this area of town. And she said, and then I said, and let me tell you this. And I was talking like a father to her. I said, Angela, don't trust everyone. Don't trust everyone, because there was this innocence about her. And she turned to me and she kind of had this twinkle in her eye, almost like a little bit of a prankster that was going on. And she said to me, and this was very profound, she said, can I trust you? And I'm looking over at this monk over here and thinking what he might be thinking. And my first response was, oh, yes, you can trust me. You can trust me. And then my second thought came to me was, no, no. You have to decide who you can trust, if you can trust me. And then my third question that came, which was most profound, I wanted to say to her, if you knew me, I wouldn't trust me. So, I would like to offer all of those three thoughts, okay, in our understanding of interreligious dialogue. Oh, you can trust me. You must decide for yourself whether you can trust me. And if I knew me and my tradition, I wouldn't trust me. The beauty of that encounter and exchange with Anna was truly a sacred moment for me of extraordinary revealing of oneness and a sense of trust and utter trust as well as deep love and respect. So I hope and pray that this gathering we will all sense that same sense of the secret of the ordinary and the ordinary secret that we share, that really it's all about God.
So I'm wondering, when was the last time that you had an experience of the sacred in your ordinary life, just in the moment? I have a story to share about how I got here, but I want to share one that just came up just now that really touched me and, like Larry, let me know I'm in the right place and I'm supported. I haven't been in this building many times. Actually, I've been here in this room for a number of things, but I've never been on the stage. And as I was listening to Larry and I glanced over, I saw the inscription, and now faith, hope, and love abide, these three, and the greatest of these is love. That scripture has been a theme through my life. First time I ever really heard it, it was read at my dad's funeral when I was 11 years old. I chose that scripture again when my mom died. I'm an only child, so I wanted that. And when I got married, I also chose that scripture. So 1 Corinthians 13 has been a theme in my life of loving and anchoring for earthly love and the Father's love. And so when I glanced up and saw that, I just had a moment of the sacred, just in that moment. So I'm humbled for that. And that is I want to talk to you about divine appointments and your awareness of where God meets you in the ordinary. We just heard Father Larry's story, and I guess I come from, I was raised as a Methodist. We're big singers, hence I'm in the Threshold Choir. And I became a spiritual seeker early on, maybe because my dad's death, my father was actually supposed to pick us up from church and never came. So whatever that was, I was a seeker and had way showers along the way. And so I've been looking for God in lots of different places and finding him in many places. And that's the key. To me, it doesn't really matter what denomination you're from. It's where is your heart open to experiencing the mystery and the holiness as it shows up. So one of the ways that I find God in the ordinary is working in a prison. And I'll tell you more about that another little later. But so I am the mail maven. The prisoners write to a number of us, and I go get the mail and process the mail. And I was very resistant. I had a stack like this. And my husband suggested that I just do a half an hour, and then I could take it to the post the next morning. So I did that. And he said, look, you're about service. You volunteer to just do a half an hour. You don't have to do it all. So I did that. And so the next morning just happened to be my birthday. And I decided to post the mail before I went off to work. And as I was pulling up to the post office over here, I saw two Franciscans pop into Via Maestra. And if you've ever had an inspiration to do a random act of kindness, you'll know what happened. So I thought I was going to the post office, but I found myself going into Via Maestra, and while Father Charles and Father Larry were looking at the menu, I just called to the waitress and said, whatever they're ordering, I'm paying for it. And they looked at me, and Father Larry said, Charles, did you hear what she said? Because Charles was into the menu. And so they talked to, they looked at me, and they said, well, why would you want to do that? And I said, you know, it's my birthday today, and I just really feel called to give this to you, so please allow me. But I have to do this mail thing, so go make your order, and I'll go do the mail, and then I'll come back. And Father Larry and Father Charles said, well, we'd like to gift you. Is it really and truly your birthday? And I said, it really and truly is. And so I was serenaded with a German birthday song in harmony, and it was just extraordinary. So then Ronaldo looked over the counter, and he said, what's going on? And he says, is it really your birthday today? I said, yeah, it really is. And he said, no one pays. No one pays. We got it. So he, too, got caught. So I did the mail. I came back. I joined them for a cup of coffee, and we just started to chat I really didn't. I knew who Father Larry was, but he didn't know who I was. And we just started to share, and we shared from what was present for us in the loving, and just from ourselves. And by the time we were done with breakfast, and I had a text my assistant at work, and I just said, "I'm with two priests. All is well," because I wanted her to know why I was late. And by the time we were done, Father Larry said, "Would you be part of this?" And then Father Charles has invited me to be in a project with him. And the beauty of this, and the thing I want to invite you to, is that part of it is the awareness that God is in everywhere and everything, and it's whether or not we're willing to be awake to experience that. And the beauty of that birthday, and what a way, I mean, after that, there was nowhere to go. I mean, I was already on a high. I'm like, "Sorry, honey, you know, you can't beat my breakfast," you know. And one of the magic things about that encounter was that each one of us knew it was a divine appointment. We knew we were to encounter, I mean, as we were having this conversation, as we were discovering the other. Remember last week, Samara talked about welcoming the stranger. And, you know, do you have a gate or do you have an opening? And what came forward is that we were just all really open. And as we were open to one another, we felt, well, I know I did, and I think Father can speak too, we felt that we were supposed to be together, that God was using us for a much higher purpose. And so, So I guess the for me, finding God in the ordinary is as close as the person you're sitting next to, or the person in the parking lot, or the person in front of you at the grocery store. But we have to come out of our ego to see that God is everywhere and in everyone, including inmates and homeless people and those that we're not fond of, like United Airlines, but God's there too. So that's a piece of what I wanted to say, and I'll say some more later.
Thank you, Arlene. I just want to say too, and that meeting that we had, it was like truly like a divine appointment that we were all meant to be there for that meeting. And at that moment, I was thinking about this talk. This was, what, a month ago or less than a month ago?
December 9th.
Oh, that's right, December 9th. Yes. And maybe just to draw in on grace, unexpected grace in the ordinary. I just felt, I didn't know Arlene, but at that moment I felt to ask her to co-present this subject together. So there was grace in that. So what I wanted to talk about now was more a Franciscan theological approach and our view, okay? To give you our appreciation, you know, the Franciscan, we have our own charismatic way of living, our charism founded by St. Francis of Assisi and St. Clair. So, and that's somewhat unique in the church, okay? So it's a unique expression of the spirituality of Catholicism and Christianity, okay? It's a unique expression. So, but first, before I do that, I wanted, when we look at divisions among other religious traditions, an incredible challenge and difficulty that we have in coming together is one that you might not think it is. But the incredible difficulty that we face is with the concept of the Trinity. Now, this seems so way out and far out. What does this have to do about anything? Karl Rahner said, if in Catholicism, if we were to announce tomorrow in all the churches, we just threw out the concept of the Trinity. We no longer believe in the Trinity. He said, no one would care. It's not important. It's not important at all to us. No one would care anything about that. And yet it's the very foundation of our understanding, the Trinity, that God exists three in one. Okay? This is a basic, and I chose this very, very carefully because I, especially if Yama was here, I wanted to be very, very careful about this, because this is a point of great discussion. The Muslim people, the Islamic people say, that is heresy. There's one God. There's only one God. And how can you say there's three in one? From the Jewish tradition as well. What do we do with the Trinity? This is a major, major difficulty in coming together in our understanding of what does it mean that we believe in the Trinity. And the Trinity for us in our Christian tradition, is that it exists three persons in unity and relationship. It's a basic principle of where is the foundation of our understanding of our spirituality. So from that standpoint, I wanted to go to the two major theologians of our Catholic tradition. That's St. Thomas Aquinas and St. Bonaventure. St. Thomas Aquinas, we just celebrated his feast day yesterday. He was a Dominican, and St. Bonaventure was a Franciscan. They were both accepted and endorsed theologies, but they came from very, very different approaches. Okay, St. Thomas Aquinas came from what we call an above theology. That is, means we are striving to know God who is above, and that God is known above, and that in some way God can be known in our minds. And that was Thomas's basic principle, although he came to know by the last 3 months of his life, he said, all that I have written about God is pure straw. No one can know God, and he threw it out. Okay, St. Bonaventure, who represents our Franciscan tradition, based on the teachings and the spirituality of St. Francis of Assisi, comes from a below theology. That means that we know and can see God not in above, but from below. From the human condition, we understand God. That Christ became incarnate in the human form, and therefore we come to know God in the human form. Okay? Now, that's a principle that I'd like to draw from on that, is that the principle from St. Thomas Aquinas was that I can know. That was his basic principle. I can know. St. Bonaventure's principle was, I cannot know. I cannot know. That was his basic principle. That God is mystery, and that I cannot know. In saying that I cannot know, also means that I cannot claim anything, because I don't know. I'm ignorant. I don't know. And therefore, you do not have a position of superiority. You have a position of humility down below. I do not know. Okay? So, drawing from that, can we say that we know God? I think that's the basic principle. If I say, and I'm not just talking from the Christian standpoint, I'm saying from any religious standpoint, any religious tradition, if you can say, I know the truth. I know the truth. Where is that coming out of? That's coming out of your ego. If you can say, I do not know, that's coming out of a sense of true humility. And so, that is the position that I would like to raise right here. Okay, going back to our own Catholic tradition, the Church raised this question as the 16th question in the Baltimore Catechism, of which many of us remember. The question is, where is God? Where is God? And the answer that they gave, God is everywhere. This is the question and the answer that was in the Baltimore Catechism. God is everywhere. From that standpoint, being critical of my own Catholic tradition, they then went on to say that the inclusiveness of that answer was not really the ultimate truth. We could say that God was not here. God was not over there. God was not, when a priest celebrated the sacrament and he was not worthy, God was not there. No, God was not in some kind of situation or some sin. God was not over there in the Protestant tradition, or God was not over there with those Buddhist people. And we basically delineated that whole idea that God is everywhere. And actually, in doing this, the church unwittingly laid the foundation for modern atheism, because we kept saying where God was not. We kept saying where God was not, and where God was not allowed to be. What happened was, while claiming that on the one hand God is everywhere, we asserted in effect that God is hardly anywhere except within our control. Okay? So getting back to the Franciscan theological approach out of St. Bonaventure, and following St. Bonaventure was Blessed Duns Scotus, who wrote In the Light of St. Bonaventure. Duns Scotus says, and he speaks about from a philosophical notion about being. He says, we may speak of being with only one voice, from the being of the earth itself to the waters upon the earth, to the minerals, to the earth, to the flowers, to the trees, to the grasses, to the animals, to the human, to angelic choirs, and the divine. There is only one being. Duns Scotus then, along with St. Bonaventure, would say that once you stop seeing the divine in any one link of the chain of being, the whole chain will fall apart. This is somewhat an oversimplification, but either you see God in all things or you see God in nothing, basically. Scotus, building on the life of St. Francis of Assisi and his love for animals, creatures, brother, sun, sister, moon, that God only creates this. That was a basic principle for Duns Scotus. He called it thisness. He said, this is where God is. God is in that apple. God is in this water. It's thisness. It's not thatness. It's thisness. God is right here. And so, drawing from that principle, I would like us to think about thisness. Whatever thisness is, everything is thisness. We're all this, this, this. That is where God dwells. Thank you, Marlene.
It's a hard act to follow. I would say that not only is God in the this, God's in the now. And that's another place to be conscious. I am a big fan of La Casa de Maria, and Dr. Michael Carney, who happens to be the doctor at Serenity House working with visiting nurse and hospice care, is also leading a class with his wife on awakening the heart. And he brought in a Native American couple to one session, and in listening to Father Larry, the Native American tradition is also that God is this, and everything is sacred land, from Mother Earth. We've really forgotten Mother Earth. So walking on her back and having an awareness of the sacredness of the ground and the sacredness of the sky, and we had an experience in nature where we really became one with nature. And this man spoke about how some people have those animals or things that they're afraid of or they dislike. And he talked about rattlesnakes, where he lives up in Pine Mountain. There's a lot of rattlesnakes. There's a lot of fear about rattlesnakes. And we look at whether it's a rattlesnake or it's another as an enemy. And one of the things he does with the animals, all of them, is he says, I always pray for their children, because every being loves its children. And so I tell Brother Rattlesnake, I'm praying for your children, and they leave me alone. This idea of loving the enemy is one of, to me, the hardest teachings of Jesus. It's real easy for me to love. I mean, I can love him, you know, not a problem. Loving the person who, loving ISIS, loving You know, because God calls us to love all, not pick and choose, not that truth. And so I'm not saying that's easy, but I do say that if it's all part of God's plan, and from my tradition, I can't pretend to know the truth. I'm lucky if I know my own truth, much less yours or how the world's truth is. And in my tradition, I'm in a ministry called the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness. All our prayers are for the highest good. Because my ego knows what my prayer, you know, God as the bellhop in the sky and give me this and give me that. But I don't really know what the highest plan is. And I have to, if I truly accept God's will, I have to pray and trust that that prayer will be answered, but maybe not from my ego point of view. So loving one's enemy is, to me, one of the key teachings, both outer. I think what we're seeing here in the division in the world are the people that are taking positions from an ego stance with finger up and finger pointed, saying, I know, you don't. I want to just offer you a poem written by Thich Nhat Hanh. I also have to plug this book. This is called How Can I Help? It was written in like 1987 by Ram Dass and Paul Gorman. Paul Gorman was at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine. And it's a book about being of service. And, of course, I work with volunteers. And it's a treasure. You can see it's beat up. But in this idea of finding God in everyone and in everything and in every situation, in the thisness of each moment, let me offer you this poem and just see how it resonates with you. It says, the poem is called Please Call Me by My True Names. Do not say that I'll depart tomorrow, because even today I still arrive. Look deeply. I arrive in every second to be a bud on a spring branch, to be a tiny bird with wings still fragile, learning to sing in my new nest, to be a caterpillar in the heart of a flower, to be a jewel hiding itself in a stone. I still arrive in order to laugh and to cry, in order to fear and to hope. The rhythm of my heart is the birth and death of all that are alive. I am the mayfly metamorphosing on the surface of the river, and I am the bird which, when spring comes, arrives in time to eat the mayfly. I am a frog swimming happily in the clear water of a pond. And I am the grass snake who, approaching in silence, feeds itself on the frog. I am the child in Uganda, all skin and bones, my legs as thin as bamboo sticks. And I am the arms merchant selling deadly weapons to Uganda. I am the 12-year-old girl, refugee on a small boat, who throws herself into the ocean after being raped by a sea pirate. And I am the pirate, my heart not yet capable of seeing and loving. I am a member of the Politburo with plenty of power in my hands. And I am the man who has to pay his debt of blood to my people, dying slowly in a forced labor camp. My joy is like spring so warm, it makes flowers bloom in all walks of life. My pain is like a river of tears, so full it fills all four oceans. Please call me by my true names, so I can hear all my cries and laughs at once, so I can see that my joy and pain are one. Please call me by my true names, so I can wake up and so the door of my heart can be left open, the door of compassion.
Thank you, Arlene. drawing from the Native American traditions. I've worked many years, actually most of my priestly life with Native Americans, especially in New Mexico, and I worked with the Mescalero Apaches for many years, and I have a great love for those people. But I'd like to share just one story kind of drawing on the Native American tradition. When I first got to Mescalero, I came there, and I was invited to an Apache wedding, and it was a traditional Apache wedding that was going to be out in the woods. And I was really nervous. I had just gotten to Mescalero probably 6 months, so I was real nervous and about what was my role there. And one day I was at the post office, and one of the medicine people walked in. And I knew him, and I had a great respect for him, and actually a great love, and we became very great friends. He died, and they invited me to do the dressing ceremony for him, along with two other family members, which was a great, great honor. He was a wonderful, wonderful, incredible man, the late Bernard II. But he walked in, and Bernard was raised as a Catholic. He went to one of our Indian boarding schools, but then turned away from Catholicism, and he said, anything white man's religion, he says, I don't have anything to do with that. But we became great friends. So anyway, this one day he came into the post office, and I was standing there, and he heard I was going to this wedding. And he said, so what are you going to do at the wedding? And because this was kind of unheard of to invite a priest to these weddings. And I was real nervous about what I was going to do. And I said, Bernard, to be honest with you, I have no idea what I'm going to do at the wedding. I have no idea. And he saw my concern, and his great love, he said to me, and this was something that struck with me and resonated with me my whole time among the Apaches and Indian people, he said, well, don't worry about it. Just follow your heart, and it'll be right. And he walked away. So, I think that's a key here. I think that's a key. So, what I'd like to talk about is this whole idea, if we're talking about the ego as a sense of knowing, then the ego knows, and then in knowing, it creates what we all know as dualistic thinking. There's right and there's wrong, there's black and there's white, there's you and there's me, and we're different. And we're just drawn into that dualistic thinking. And today, it's profound. It's profound. I was watching the news the other night. I don't know if you saw David Horowitz. Do you know who David Horowitz is? Some of you maybe know. He's a very outspoken person on the very conservative side. He spoke at University of Santa Barbara here, and then he went down to San Diego and spoke there. And during one of his question and answers, this woman comes up, and she was obviously from the Middle East. She was wearing, you know, the traditional garment. And she asked him a question that had something to do about the university, that really had nothing to do about what he was talking about, whether she should he was in support of a certain thing. And he just started kind of attacking her. And he said, just be quiet. She said, tell me one thing. Do you condone or you condemn Hamas? And she was just taken back. She said, what do you mean? She said, no. He said, no, just tell me. Do you condone or do you condemn Hamas? And she said, well, I really can't answer that. He said, no, you have to answer it. And it got to be very argumentative. Anyway, the point was, that's the mentality that's going around today. We're being asked a question to think dualistically. Either you're against us or you're for us. Where do you stand? Our understanding is what we call that thin space. We have to stand in between, where we do not take sides. We stand in the middle, in the thin space, and that's where truth is found. And we can only enter, and this is a whole subject in itself that I'll just touch on, and you all know this, that thin space is what we would refer to as mysticism and contemplation and meditation. That's where we have to enter into all of this. We can't be thinking dualistically, and we have to avoid that. And it's so hard not to take sides. You know, we cannot do that. We have to enter into pure mysticism, that thin space. And you all know about that. So that's what I would just like to throw out, just very basically. How do we understand the secret of the ordinary, not in a dualistic mindset, but in a mysticism and contemplative mindset?
So I know we have to break. Let me just say two things about that for your consideration while you go have those treats that are calling you. So in that either or, in that us and them, you may remember that old Pogo cartoon where we have met the enemy and it is us. So there's that to kind of look within on our own dualistic internal dialogue, the part of us that finds an enemy within, inside of ourselves that we don't like, and how do we embrace that. I would invite you, as you're listening to conversation, every time you want to say but, consider putting and. Instead of this, make a bridge with the word and. And the last thing in terms of finding the thin spaces, and on the way back I'll talk about working with dying, because that's certainly a place to find thin spaces. I wanted to remind you and remind me that what Father Larry's talking about, that meditation, that contemplation, in the busyness of the life that we all lead, in that time and rush, and I've got this next thing to do, and the doingness and the doingness, we become human doings. And the call and the mysticism and the thin place only shows up when we remember that we are human beings. And we put down the machines and the schedule, and we bear witness to the thisness and the now. So my invitation as you go take your break is to do it consciously, to realize that you are walking with the sacred right here, right now, in this moment. And what if you experienced each other from that place and welcome the stranger and open the gate of your heart? And if it's somebody you know, reopen that gate in a new way. See them with new eyes. Experience them for the first time with an open, loving heart. Go have those treats. We'll see you later.